This is an Audio Wool original.
This episode of Fright Day is brought to you by Springheel Jack Coffee. You need great coffee. Jack delivers. Visit springheeljack.coffee.
What is it called?
Toad the Wet Sprocket?
It's good.
Bittersweet. It's bittersweet. Is it good? No, that's the Crash Test Dummies.
No, it isn't the Crash Test Dummies.
It's bittersweet.
That's not the one that I'm talking about.
That's a good one.
Is that not Toad the Wet Sprocket?
Man, this music rules.
The 90s.
Hold on. Better than Ezra, not Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Oh, it feels good living with you.
See, I didn't understand. So I was listening to the song and paying attention to the lyrics for the first time, and I was like, uh-oh. So like, why is he saying, uh-oh, it was good, uh-oh, it was good living with you.
I think he goes, uh-oh.
I don't know why he keeps saying, uh-oh.
I think it's what-low.
I really think that Sam and I might have this. That's fun. It is Fright Day. I'm Counselor Byron. But you already know that. We've all been seated in front of this crackling campfire for a while now, eating junk food, throwing food in each other's mouths, crunching aluminum cans on our foreheads, gossiping about who likes who, enjoying our final moments before dealing with campers becoming our duty. The sun has stealthily set, and it's now time to talk about how many bodies haven't been found in that lake, and to read your submitted stories. It's True Tales of Terror, Volume 11, Summer Camp Edition, Part 2, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Hey, did you guys have to cut those shorts off, or did they come that short?
Don't be jealous. Good.
The last one was in February, was that?
It wasn't a campfire edition.
Got it.
Around this burning timber is Sam.
Hey, guys.
Jamie.
Hey.
And head counselor for tonight, Kelly.
Yes. Yes, I'm the head counselor.
Okay, but before we get going, I hear you want to tell me about something.
Yeah, I have a true tale snatched from the headlines just for you, Byron.
Isn't that what Law and Order does?
It is. This is definitely Law and Order-ish. I am going to tell you some things that are going to make you want to laugh.
Oh.
I want you to remember that this is a morbid story and very sad and serious.
Turn on the mic.
And I mean no disrespect to the victims. This guy in Virginia was arrested a couple days ago. He is, by profession, a carny.
Oh.
Yep. He does officially classify as a serial killer now, Byron, because he killed 3 women.
Just by not tightening the bolts on the scrambler?
Nope, that is incorrect.
It's dangerous.
That is incorrect. Okay, it's one of the most ridiculous explanations for how he isn't responsible. So when he was arrested, one of the bodies, he says he shot in the head twice accidentally when he tripped and fell. And then he was driving her to the hospital when her body accidentally rolled up into a bag that was in the back of his truck and rolled out of his truck and down a ravine.
So heads up, I don't believe that's how it happened, but imagine if it was.
I mean, I don't, I no. Yeah,
just take a second and think about that.
No.
Whoa, a rabbit runs in front of
and then he got to the bottom of the ravine.
Okay, seriously.
And couldn't pick it back up.
Lots of slide whistles.
So he just rolled it into the river. He
so
then
floated it to the hospital.
A second one, he said he had sex with this woman in the woods near his home and just, yeah, never mind.
Wait, something awful happened?
Well, so he said he was trying to shoot an animal, but he shot her instead.
Oh, the old Oscar Pistorius.
The Blade Runner.
Yeah, although he did have both his legs, it looks like. He then covered her body up with logs next to a creek.
your face was
to keep her warm while he went for help.
All right, someone throw a log on this, by the way.
Yeah, and finally the third one, it sounds like he actually said, yeah, I mean, I got in a fight with her and I shot her.
God, well, I mean, first of all, thoughts with the victims, truly, that's
I mean, if
really
they hadn't
horrendous.
Caught him, though, like, This would be a really difficult serial killer to catch because his MO sounds very different for each of these, right? So
I think they're all just whoopsies.
He buries one of them. He puts another one under some logs.
Okay.
And then the other one rolls down a ravine and he puts in the river.
You know, I mean...
Well, golly, I can't catch a break.
Okay.
I mean, pretty much. So this guy, I mean, looking at his picture, it's hard to say...
Oh, no, he's a serial killer.
No, he is, but officially
does
now.
Does he have face tattoos?
No, oddly
not.
Not
a SoundCloud rapper?
Yeah.
Hey, wait, we're on SoundCloud.
They do think that this was the extent of his victims. So, I mean, that's positive at least. But he did travel extensively throughout the East Coast. So they are currently speaking with other jurisdictions to find out if he perhaps committed any other.
They're looking into banana peel slips.
Yes. I mean, obviously, condolences to the family.
Yes,
this is super tragic and sad. But I've never heard such a ridiculous explanation. I mean, it makes it sound like a Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, someone ran into a black hole painted on the side of a mountain?
Pretty much, yes. So, Byron, that's your true tale snatch from the headlines.
I thought you were going to talk about that man who tried to kill two people with a machete on that hiking trail.
Oh, no, that one is real great, too, though.
Pretty awful stuff.
That fits right into our campfire tales.
Ooh. Apparently, hadn't he done the same thing recently?
He had been stalking the Appalachian Trail since April, and it was just a matter of time until he found his victims.
Good God.
Good golly. Ugh. Well, Kelly, what are we looking forward to today? We requested stories from our listeners and they provided.
Oh my gosh, we have so many cool stories. In fact, I have to say, we probably have half of another True Tales episode in really solid submission, so it was tough to narrow it down for tonight, but good stuff is headed your way.
Well, I can't wait.
We actually got one very special submission from our friend Springheeled Steve.
Oh, this is Steve from Springheeled Jack Coffee.
We got a pretty cool story from him.
We got a pot of it on the fire right now.
Oh, yeah, and one of those percolators.
Cowboy coffee.
So this he actually sent me kind of in real time. This was a situation that happened to him.
I'm going to ignore her good by better than Ezra noise. I don't know why that was there.
Well, it's just really bothering me right now because he says,
Blade.
And then
well, this is fun.
Steve wrote me three short emails kind of in real time as the story was unfolding, which is kind of fun. So I'll start with the first one. This is mid-April. Okay, this just happened to me. I work for a company that used to be huge and is now not very huge at all. We have a campus that is designed to provide workspace for nearly 10,000 people in six different buildings. We have around a quarter of that now. As a result, two of the buildings have been closed. I mean, they're still open, but they're empty. There's a group of us that walk through these buildings throughout the day because the weather is still shitty here, especially in the winter. Well, today, nobody from my group was available, so I did the walk alone. About halfway through the walk, I decided to use one of the restrooms. The way they're set up is there's a door, then a little alcove, then the entry to the bathroom proper a little to the right, so you can't see in from the door. So I open the door, I'm reaching for the light switch, they leave these off and it's pitch black inside, when I hear this sound from within the restroom. It's a high-pitched voice, definitely a man, and it's either crying or singing or mumbling.
Is that pretty close?
I don't know. We'll have to ask Steve. I'm guessing not.
Everything I have to say is something that a 10-year-old boy would say. So,
man.
My hand froze at the light switch. I wasn't completely inside, so I was holding the door open. The sound continued, and now I thought it was crying and mumbling. But it didn't sound natural. It was inhuman. I froze. I was suddenly terrified. Normally, I would be concerned, but right then, it was all I could do to keep from screaming. I backed out and let the door close slowly. I walked back down the hall about 30 feet, and I just watched the door. I watched it for 30 minutes, but no one came out. I considered going back in, but I was too afraid. So I went and grabbed one of the guys that walks with me, and I told him what happened, and we both went down there. I opened the door, and I can hear the sound. I look at the guy with me, and he looks at me like he's hearing a ghost, too. I flicked on the light and the sound stops. These bathrooms are kind of reverby and there's not even a residue of sound. I walk in and check under the stalls for feet. No feet, but the last stall is locked. My friend is very tall and he looks over the top. He says, "Jesus, it's a mess." So now I have to see. I go into the next stall and stand on the toilet and look over. The entire stall is covered in what I believe is shit.
Okay, well that's...
But there's no smell. None whatsoever. We left and I came back to my desk and now I'm writing you this true tale of terror. I guess we're going to tell security. I won't be back in the office until Tuesday, but you can bet your ass I'm going back. Okay, so
ghost proof.
Update the next day.
Oh,
I have to say right there, it sounds like this company has outsourced a lot, downsized, let people go. It's pretty much empty. You are under no obligation, Steve, to poop in the bathroom.
I mean, I guess that's true. So my friend went back with another person today and there was no sound. The last stall is still locked, but they decided the walls are not covered in shit. They think it looks more like rust. But the toilet had definitely been used. Still no smell. So then I got an update about a month after that. That entire building is now empty and shut down. Bathrooms are all dark and the switches don't work. I went down there by myself again and opened the bathroom door. Pitch black. There was no obvious sound, but it sounded like someone was in there trying to be quiet. I didn't investigate. Maybe there's a guy who just wants some privacy to shit in the dark. Told some people in my office and they had all kinds of crazy stories about this campus. Ghosts, suicides, affairs, abuse. It was built on the site of a very famous concert venue from back in the 70s. So clearly, I've asked Steve for some additional detail and we may have a continuation of this story.
Oh, wow.
Do you think if a ghost is in this stall, he kind of coughs when you come in just so you know that he's there and you don't do anything, you know, embarrassing?
Do you do that?
I always cough to let somebody know you're there.
I don't do that. I'm always like super, super quiet. Yeah.
You are part of the problem.
Yep.
So the shit explorer is the guy that makes the coffee we drink.
Okay, it's Rust Explorer.
Well, I'm just saying.
I mean, I probably should have asked him if he's okay with us. Like, I don't know. I mean, he didn't say not to use his name.
Alex, we're concerned about your father.
Could be.
Doesn't seem like, I mean, idle hands are the devil's...
poop smearers.
Okay.
Really fabulous story from longtime listener Daniel. Didn't know you were a religious offspring, Daniel. This puts your presence in our group into a whole new context. Okay, he's pretty incredible. We really appreciate Daniel. All right, here we go. My dad is a pastor of an older church in my hometown. Lots of funerals held in the church, and people have died in it too. It creaks a lot and is overall not fun to be in late at night. Fair enough, I would see that. Now that I say that, I have two short stories to tell. The first happened in March, so this is pretty recent. My friend and I were there at around 10 at night and in the office. He kept saying he heard voices upstairs and I couldn't hear them. He said the voices did not sound happy. Every time we got quiet, he said he could hear them. He was legitimately scared. Nobody was supposed to be in the church and not many people have keys. I do because I lock up the church. Mm. We eventually snuck upstairs and looked around. Nothing. We went to the fourth floor. Nothing. As we walked down the stairs, I heard voices. Far off, but definitely came from inside the building. We walked all over and looked for lights left on and looked for any cars outside. Literally nothing. I don't know what or who it was, but both of us definitely heard something that night. See, this is the type of thing, like voices, something spooky like that. It's not as melodramatic as other stories that we might hear, but like I feel like that's the kind of thing that almost everybody has experienced at some point.
Mm-hmm. It's the crack between...
world.
Mm.
Yeah?
No, I was going to say it's crack.
See, crack, okay.
The second short story is the one that freaked me out the most. It was on the night my dad had to pick something up from the church and work for a little bit. My brothers and I decided to play hide and seek. It was in the old part of the church, well over 100 years old. People had died in this section. A few people, in fact.
Well, they have an old people's section?
Well, no, an old section of the church. Like, this part of the church existed long before the rest of the church.
See, I keep getting that stuff goofed up. When I was in high school, my friend Dennis and I, on 80s Day, accidentally dressed like we were 80. 80? Yeah.
That's Tell me that's a true good. Story.
It is a true
that's
story.
Really good.
And it was freshman year?
Sophomore year. And we were a smash hit.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Old people dying in the old people's section.
Right. I went and hid in the sanctuary and laid down under a pew. After a while, I heard someone coming, so I held my breath and closed my eyes and felt someone walk by me. They kept walking and eventually I heard them stop. I didn't hear anyone else walk by, so I crawled out and looked where I had heard the person stop. And for a split second, I saw a very dark figure. I blinked hard, and then they were gone. At that point, I called out and asked who was there. I went out of the sanctuary and found my brothers and asked if they had been in there, and they swore they hadn't. They had stayed in the bottom floor the whole time. I ran and asked my dad, and he said he hadn't left his office. I went back to the sanctuary and heard nothing and saw nothing. I checked all the doors, and they were all locked from the inside. We ran around and never found anyone. Still honestly don't know what to think of it. I'm a skeptic, so I want to believe it was just a person. Okay, come on, Daniel. Obviously it was not just a person. It disappeared, and it was a shadow thing. Come on.
Well, there's another alternative. You see things in the corner of your eyes all the time.
But it wasn't the corner. It was dead on.
Well.
Yeah. Now we've got a story about Paul's grandpapa. Here's Paul. I had a tale to tell you, but it's not technically one of terror, though at the time I was pretty shaken up.
We hear a lot of these.
Yeah. This happened back in 1998 when I was about 14 years old, and this was directly after my grandfather's funeral. He died a few days before, and so my mother's sister and I drove up to Michigan to attend and spend time with the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. Because of the space constraints in my grandmother's house, I wound up sleeping in my grandfather's old napping room, a small room with all of his knickknacks in the basement past the laundry room.
Whoa. Okay, stop right there. We can come back to it. We are going to start immediately on a napping room for me.
No, that's not happening.
I love that napping room.
I mean, that is kind of cool.
Jamie?
What?
Do we have room for a napping room?
No.
Get rid of that kitchen.
I only add that detail in because the only light switch for the laundry room was on the opposite wall. So whenever I wanted to have any light at all, I had to walk across a pitch black room. So the morning after my grandfather's funeral, I woke up to the sound of my mom stomping on the kitchen floor to signal it was time for breakfast.
Okay. I mean,
while still mostly asleep, I started heading out into the laundry room so I can actually see where I'm going. Something stopped me, though. An odd shuffling, scraping sound like someone dragging their feet. I looked up into the completely dark room and saw my grandfather walking slowly towards me, fully visible, even with no light whatsoever. Freaking out, I stood there for a moment before slamming the door and pressing my back against it, my heart pounding. A few moments later, I snapped out of it and chided myself for being so rude. I was staying in his room, the one he always went to when he wanted to rest. So I opened the door and apologized to an empty room, the apparition completely gone. I visited a few more times and never felt anything but peace in that room and never saw anything odd again. I've always been interested in the supernatural, occult and odd, and while I've seen plenty of things I can't fully explain, that was absolutely the most impactful experience I've ever had. This is the type of story I hear pretty frequently. I think it's really hard to discount people who have those experiences, especially close to the deaths of loved ones. I'm sure you two will find a reason.
No, I would love to see my grandpa again. You know, I wish that is an encounter that could happen to me.
I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. So you're saying that this is impossible to happen to you?
No, I'm just saying that would be fantastic. I would love it if that would happen.
It would be pretty cool. Anything like that ever happened to you, B?
No. The only thing I remember after my grandpa died was that I got a bag of Ninja Turtles pizza thrower snacks on the way to pick up his body.
That's what you mean.
That's all I got.
Pizza throwers. Were those the ones that were like the little mini pizzas?
Yeah, and they tasted like pizza. But I do miss my grandparents.
Of course,
grandfathers.
We all do. You still got grandmothers?
Yeah, both of them.
Whoa.
Yeah, rolling in grandmas.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
I know.
I mean, that's great. Our next story comes from Emma.
Cool. I don't know. It's fine.
I do not believe in Emma.
I mean, I honestly, just,
there's no evidence.
With how insane you are about disbelief, I would not be surprised for you to make a statement like that.
Put an Emma here on the podcasting table in front of me, and then I will consider it.
Like I say, you say this sarcastically, but truth of the matter is that is not out of line with something you would do. It really isn't.
Put
you don't believe
Emma
in anything.
Table? We're not putting an Emma on
the table.
There's
not room for anything on this table.
I mean, it's not out of line for him to refuse to believe in something that absurdly obvious. Anyhow, Emma's story is as follows. When I was 7, my family moved from Portland, Oregon, back to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where we were originally from. My parents bought a house and we moved in the summer of 1998. Upstairs, there were two bedrooms adjacent from one another with a bathroom in the middle. In the bedroom I chose, there was also a very small attic space that was only accessible through a small door, maybe 3 feet tall. As a kid, I was terrified to sleep in that room alone and instead slept in my sister's room until I was in the fourth grade. It might be worth noting that in our previous home, I slept in my own room without a problem, but suddenly in this house, I absolutely did not want to be alone. Kids are smart. You really have to trust kids when they've got feelings like this. Within 6 months of moving in, my mom was diagnosed.
One of our kids' gut feelings once was to pick up a discarded chew off a parking lot and stick it in her mouth. So I don't know.
I don't know if that was a gut feeling. I don't think that counts as a gut feeling.
Oh, I think it turned into one.
Oh my God, Sam, you're absurd. We got it out of her mouth very quickly. Anyhow.
She is now addicted.
Shut up.
It's a regular, habit.
Do you know how expensive it is to feed your 2.5-year-old a roll of chew once a week?
Half pouches, right?
Oh my God. Well,
you have to do the little bandits or otherwise she just swallows it.
Within 6 months of moving in, my mom was diagnosed with and lost her battle with cancer.
Oh, Emma. God. I'm sorry.
Really sorry.
I'm sorry about that. That's...
The 2,500 square foot house suddenly became far too large for just my dad, my sister, and I. For the next 15 years, my dad put the house on the market 6 or 7 times, by my best guess. Every single time, within a week of the for sale sign going up in the yard, the pipes in my bathroom upstairs would leak and the ceiling below would completely fall through to the kitchen. Each time, we had a number of companies come out to fix it and try to find the problem, but no one ever found anything. Okay, so let's just let this sink in for a minute. Puts it on the market 6 or 7 times. Every single time, this same thing happens.
The pipes leak
and the floor collapses. Okay, that's insane.
I mean, this sounds exactly like every contractor and plumber I've ever dealt with.
Sam, you're an idiot. They would look at the plumbing and nothing was ever found any time this happened. We even remodeled the entire bathroom, plumbing and all, and maybe a month after it was finished, again, we came home to a kitchen with the ceiling on the floor.
Wow.
Along with the pipes leaking, small animals would also die in the walls, leaving a smell of decay throughout the entire house.
It's about time for an open concept. Let's take the ceiling out.
Yeah, I guess. My God. Every time my dad tried to sell the house, we were dealing with extreme water damage or the stench of dead animals, often both. Needless to say, my dad would always eventually give up and take the house off the market. My dad had to go out of town a lot for work, and he would sometimes be gone for weeks at a time. So I often had friends over to stay with me. One night when I was in high school, my friend was staying over and suddenly realized that after all these years of coming to my house, she had never noticed the little door in my room. And she wanted to know where it went. I told her it was some attic space and it was just old stuffed animals and toys in there. But she insisted that she wanted to look in. When she poked her head in, absolute panic took over her. She shot up and started screaming at me to lock the door back in. It was the type of door that you have to lift up and pull the whole piece of wood out. When she calmed down, she told me that she saw a dead man on his hands and knees crawling. This obviously freaked me out, and I didn't want to hear any more because it was 3 a.m. and we were alone in the house. I tried to shake it out of my head and we went to sleep. We talked about it every once in a while throughout the years, and her story never changed. She was thoroughly freaked out about it every time I brought it up. Before this, I never really attributed the pipes leaking and the animals dying to anything paranormal going on. But suddenly this made me realize that the attic that she saw this dead ghost figure in is attached to the bathroom that leaks every time the house goes up for sale. It's also worth mentioning that Murfreesboro is home to one of the bloodiest Civil War battles. Also, I just assume I'm pronouncing the name of that town wrong.
Murfreesboro.
Yeah. I think you got it.
Murfreesboro is what I'm saying.
Well,
how do you get Murphy's out of
Murfreesboro.
That?
Murfreesboro.
Okay, probably was emphasized. Anyhow, so it was the home to the Battle of Stones River. My ex-brother-in-law had psychic abilities and told me he would see ghost soldiers around my house very often. While I'm not a skeptic and I wholeheartedly believe in ghosts and other paranormal happenings, I also try to approach things like this with a skeptical point of view. I didn't believe anything he said until we were playing dominoes one night. We flipped all of the pieces over face down, and he guessed the numbers correctly on every single one until his nose started bleeding. I only tell you this part of the story to add some validity to it because for a long time, I didn't want to admit that anything paranormal was going on in my house. In 2014, my dad got a job offer in Seattle, so we had to actually sell the house, for real this time. Again, animals died, and the ceiling below the bathroom fell out onto the kitchen floor. We fixed it, and luckily the dead animal smell didn't stick around for quite as long this time, and we got an offer on the house in a relatively short amount of time. My sister and I were left to clean the house out, and there was an unmistakably dark vibe that wasn't there before. I opened the little door that hadn't been opened since that night in high school, closed my eyes, grabbed my bag of toys, and never went in that room again. Super spooky.
Yeah.
So she's got one more story for us. The next story is a family friend's who we have since lost contact with, so I'm not going to use their real names. Mm. My mom and dad became really good friends with my sister's third grade teacher, Karen, and her husband, Mike, who is a Civil War historian. About 5 years ago, they began waking up around 2 a.m. every night to a loud banging on their back door. But whenever they got up to see what was going on, there was nothing there. Also during this time, Mike's breathing machine that he had to wear at night had molded over, and things like gloves would go missing. This went on for weeks with no sign of stopping. One day, their house cleaner called Karen when they were out and told her she wasn't going back in the house until she came back. When she got there, the house cleaner said that when she was vacuuming, she noticed that the corner of a rug was flipped up. So she flipped it back over, turned around, and went to clean the bathroom. When she came back out, the rug was rolled up tight at the foot of the bed like a cigar. The next week, they had someone come over to cleanse the house. She said they had a spirit that had likely attached to Mike and his Civil War research. They told the spirit that they had nothing to offer him and couldn't help him find whatever he was looking for. That night, there was no banging on the back door. The glove that had gone missing was suddenly in the drawer that it was supposed to have been in the entire time, and the breathing machine stopped molding over. Again, as a strong believer with a skeptical sense, this story sounds too wild to be true, but these people are the no-nonsense academic type, so it would be very unlikely for them to make such a story up. Great stories, Emma. Yeah. My gosh. Thank you.
I dig it.
Yeah, very, very good.
All right, you've heard us talk about coffee in general and about Springy Hill Jack specifically on the show before, but now we can finally introduce this artisan roaster as a show sponsor. It took months of harassment and coercion, but Springy Hill Jack finally either lost the will to resist or just lost their minds and jumped aboard the caffeine-powered nightmare juggernaut that is Friday. Why did we stalk them like Michael Myers after Laurie Strode? It's not just because we operate exclusively on coffee. It's because Spring Hill Jack offers a menu of what we consider the best coffees we've ever tasted, combined with the ethics of a small, family-run business and the black magic that manifests when you have a genuine mad food scientist feeding the roaster. It's true. Spring Hill Jack offers single-source craft coffee at an affordable price. Their coffee starts at $10 a pound, and curated blends are all $12 a pound, which is insane, and we told them that. So you can enjoy the absolute finest coffees on pretty much any budget. Spring Hill Jack batch roasts these magic beans, and would love to work with you to craft a custom roast that fits your palate like a palette glove, I don't know. Fright Day favorite roasts include Black Phillip, Reanimator, The Hessian, and Experiment Number 5, which is my nameless favorite. But you really can't go wrong with any of them. Does summer got you down? Is it too hot to brew a pot? How about a smooth, mild, cold brew from specially selected single origin roasts? Those handsome devils at Spring Hill Jack drink it all day and would love to ship a kit or a jug of this cool treat to your shack. Fright Day started off as fans of Spring Hill Jack coffee and cold brew, became friends, and now we're partners. We buy it, drink it, and love it, and you will too. Check them out at Springheeled, that's H-E-E-L-D, jack.coffee. Tell them Fright Day threatened you, sent you. Springheeledjack.coffee.
So this is a bit unorthodox. I don't think we've ever done this before on a
first,
True Tale of Terror. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a listener who sent a pretty damn cool story.
He didn't use written words.
He didn't. Michael's beyond written. And he sent us a video/audio recording of him telling a very spooky story. He has confirmed with us that he's 100% okay with his audio being played.
But we're not going to play that video because... What's that? Oh, Mike's here. We'll just
Mike's going to read it.
Kelly, get out of the way.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for being here.
Here, Mike, why don't you sit down in front of the fire and tell us your story.
So, in the early 2000s, there was a group of teenagers that went to a local cemetery called the Fort Dade Cemetery.
Ooh.
They had went there in a relatively new white Mitsubishi Eclipse. It was a dark, moonlit night, and it was so quiet when they arrived at the cemetery that you could scarcely even discern that other people inhabited the area nearby.
It's dark.
Very dark.
The night had been so serene and wonderful there, exploring the woods, looking for old ruins, finding old ruined farmsteads, homesteads.
Mike's talking.
From nearly a century or more before. The trouble began as another group of teenagers had been in the cemetery smashing headstones with clubs and rocks, kicking over markers.
Not very kind.
Hooligans.
The more righteous of the two groups attacked the graveyard ruffians.
Oh, graveyard brawl.
And a fist fight ensued. At the end, the ones who were vandalizing the cemetery took off beaten and bloodied. The group of teenagers then found themselves standing in their victory area in disbelief of the damage done. They had noticed there was an old dead tree with rope marks hanging around one limb. One of them said, "This is where the witch was hanged." They noticed that someone had carved obscene things into the tree and left a hatchet half hanging out of it. One of the braver of the group walked up and removed the hatchet.
Sam. Sorry.
Continue.
As time went on, they all began to feel a very strange presence. Without rhyme or reason, they began to separate and go their separate ways, exploring the night in the cemetery.
Gotta split up.
Would not.
At one point,
keep the party together.
One of them was following who they assumed was one of their friends through a deep, dark, moonless path.
The buddy system. I'm sorry, Mike. God.
Yeah.
Things got weirder as they came to a precipice of a small berm where there was water running through in a small ravine, probably about ankle deep. As whom they thought was one of their friends walked through and surmounted a small hill on the other side, they disappeared from sight, and a strange flash was seen in the woodline. The others had seen it. However, three of them were together, and one had been by themselves. No one could explain who this fifth person was or why they seemed familiar. Nobody really knew. By the time the four had rejoined and told of their experiences wandering the dark, hollowed ground at night, they began to panic and raced back to their vehicle. As they began opening the doors and getting in, it felt as if they were being watched by hundreds of pairs of angry eyes. And then whispering began blowing on the winds. Old English. Old Southern terms. All of it was whirling in the wind like the smoke from the fire. Things got stranger as the car did not start. And after several minutes of trying, it finally kicked over. No one could account for this as the vehicle was brand new. New battery. New spark plugs. Full tank of gas.
But was it a Hyundai?
Everything was checked out by a master mechanic earlier in the week.
Mitsubishi.
As they made it down the road after the vehicle finally started, they came to a dark turn where there was no light, and it seemed like people had been discarding appliances and unwanted furniture for years. Suddenly, as the car was going through sand, it got stuck, and then suddenly the lights cut. And it was dark as pitch in the vehicle. No light, as if it had been choked out by some ethereal hand that no one could see. After some panic talking and whispering within the vehicle, it began. A very audible smack on all the sides of the car, like dozens of pairs of hands were beating on it like a drum.
Oh.
The teenagers panicked, and after screaming and screaming, finally, the lights kick back on in the car, and the car turned over, and they hauled ass out of the cemetery.
Good idea.
As they all went their separate ways for the night, one man was left at his home, and he had an eerie feeling that surrounded him all night. As he sat in his room with his radio playing low, and the lights turned down low, he lay in his bed, pondering the events of the night. He laid back and lit a cigarette, and had enjoyed it very much so, as his nerves needed some type of release. Moments after he had put the butt down and turned the radio up a little more, something strange happened. Shadows began to merge near the room door, and the man was paralyzed in his bed and he couldn't move. A haggard figure of a woman approached the bed slowly. as if she was weighed down by several hundred pounds of weight. And as she surmounted the bed and stood over the man, her body bent in an unearthly, inhuman fashion. And her face, with her long, gnarled hair, lowered into the man's. And as she lowered the face closer, her hair parted without help from any physical source.
Mom?
And behold, a gnarled, nasty, beaten face.
Oh.
Someone dead centuries earlier. And as she opened her mouth, rows of staggered, sharp teeth were visible, and green saliva and pus dripped from her mouth. And she let out a silent scream that the man only heard in his head. The next day, when the others came to his home to see if he was all right after not answering calls for hours, at around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they discovered him paralyzed on the floor, catatonic, not responsive. The only reason that this event was known is that with his last shreds of sanity, he left an account in a scribbled shorthand note on the desk.
Did he try to call the dentist for
it? It seems he had gone for a pistol. One round was put in the chamber. But it seems like whatever got him and paralyzed him did the job first before he could do it himself. He lived for 2 weeks before succumbing, closing his eyes as if he were going to sleep and never waking again. The end.
Okay, so there's one part of the story.
Thanks for telling that story.
It wasn't that great,
yeah.
Mike?
Oh, Mike.
Cool.
I know he's got. Yeah, I totally understand. You got to run. That's okay. No, I'll fill in the details. Okay, so
he left his wallet.
Mike did share. There was one difference between the story he told and the real story as it happened, and it only is with the circumstances surrounding the death at the end.
Okay.
Other than the circumstances surrounding the death, everything else is true.
I mean, that's really interesting. The slapping of the hands on the car reminded me of something.
Yeah, the gravity hills that we hear about by cemeteries, by the baby sections of cemeteries.
Oh, and it's funny you say that, because that's exactly the same kind of urban legend that surrounds that Gutelberg Cemetery I visited last year. I brought it up a couple times.
Yeah.
But it must just be a story that is pretty common around those kinds of places. I did do a little baby's handprint on a car also parked at the cemetery when we were there.
Jamie, I am sorry. I am marrying this man.
I'm a bit of a prankster.
Yeah.
Really, really creepy story.
Yeah, really, really creepy story. And I went so far as to, like, I got a first, middle, and last name from Mike.
When you interviewed him to be a counselor.
Right. And, I mean, everything checks out. Not that I would doubt our listeners.
Everyone's
anyway.
Shorts are shorter than mine. This is bullshit.
All right.
That is one of the creepiest stories we've ever had on the show, I think. So, you guys, we started one heck of a collection of stories from Taylor on the last True Tales, if you guys recall.
Really messed me up, Taylor.
Taylor had some super spooky ones.
Taylor, interestingly enough, is Canadian.
I know. I love those Canadians. When we last left off, Taylor was getting real mad at whatever was going on and whoever was bothering them in his house, he and his family. I'll just read the end of the last piece from the last episode. I stormed down the stairs shouting. I hit the light switch in the foyer and yelled, "Just leave us the F diggity bomb alone." Silence.
That's how Canadians talk.
Then the next noise almost sent me into hysterics. It was as if someone had smashed a car into the wall opposite of me. To this day, I don't know if it was a physical noise or some sort of projected noise, if that makes sense, but it was incredibly loud and fierce, and my knees went weak. I almost fell. One thing I knew was that it was an angry noise, one that didn't like to be confronted or questioned. Something inside of me snapped. I grabbed my coat off the banister and yanked open the heavy wooden oak door I mentioned earlier. One thing I didn't mention earlier was the glass storm door that was the portal between the outside world and this hell that I was currently residing in. In the reflection, standing behind me was something hazy blue and very, very large. To this day, I can't recall exactly what it looked like. All I remember is blue and the sheer size of it. It scared the shit out of me, and part of me wonders if I can't remember what it looked like for the sake of my own sanity. I just remember opening the storm door and slamming the oak door behind me, locking it, and running. I don't think I stopped running until I got to the cafe where I was supposed to meet my date. Mm. I was a wreck when I arrived, sweaty from running, hair tangled, and half babbling about what had just happened to me. She was very sympathetic, but I think my chances of scoring a second date were out of the question. She gave me a smoke, and I told her everything. To this day, I don't know if she believed me or not. To make things worse, my mom showed up at the coffee shop furious. She'd given Melanie her key to the house, and she didn't have one to get in. Her luggage was still in the van, and she wanted to get settled in. I left with her and told her what had happened. As crazy as the whole thing sounded, she believed me probably more than I had when she told me of her own experience. One thing was now definite in both of our minds, though. We were living in a haunted house. Okay, here we go. As hostile as that encounter was, it didn't impact me as much as you can think. I think that the shock of seeing something like that is kind of like having some sort of horrific injury inflicted on you. I would know. I had my hand badly cut when I was 17 and had to have most of my fingers put back on with some pretty intense surgery. That sounds like a story. The thing is, I can't really remember getting cut. I mean, I remember it happening, but I can't remember any of the pain and trauma associated with it. Like I mentioned earlier in the previous interlude, things didn't happen all the time. To be honest, I don't think there was anything that happened that was particularly rattling for a good while. One of my brother's friends felt someone grab his hand in the attic. Plenty of people reported feeling uneasy in the house. There was even one slightly humorous encounter where I was walking on the second floor of the house in the dark and I bumped into someone. I instinctively said, "Sorry, Mom," and no, a distinctly British...
I'm going to stop you.
Yep.
He said, "Sorry, Mom."
Oh, good. That's a good point.
It's Canadian.
I instinctively said, "Sorry, Mom," and a distinctly British voice said, "Sorry, mate." I was so shocked that I burst into my mom's room and asked if she had a guest, where she informed me that she didn't have a guest and to go to bed. All in all, though, I didn't come out of that incident any worse for the wear. The next incident that occurred didn't actually happen to me, but my girlfriend at the time. Though I'll tell it from my point of view and follow it up with my own experience with what would seem to be the same entity, if such a thing exists. Calling this one the lady in the basement. I was working at a not-for-profit at the time.
Everybody's got one of those. Come on.
And was helping organize a fundraising campaign. A not-for-profit or a lady in the basement?
Yep.
Okay. I was helping organize a fundraising campaign. It was an evening job where I would call potential canvassers and sign them up to do some charity work on behalf of the foundation. It was close to 8 p.m. when I received a frantic phone call from my girlfriend at the time, asking me to come home right away. We didn't have a car at the time, but it was only about a 15-minute walk from work to the house. I booked it as fast as I could, and it sounded very serious. I got into the house and shouted her name, and she called back from the sunroom. She had locked herself in there with the two dogs and the cat. She was crying and she told me that she was making something to eat when she heard her name being called from the basement. Apparently it was a woman's voice and it sounded as if it belonged to an older woman. She freaked out and ran into the sunroom where the cat already was and the dogs followed her. She locked the door behind her and called from the portable phone. I took a look and went into the kitchen and listened. The only thing I could hear was the steady drone of the boiler. I didn't think about it until years later. I had moved in with that girlfriend for about a year, and it didn't pan out, and I ended up moving back into that house with my mom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Unlike before, where I lived in the attic, I moved into the basement, as my mom had taken on a pair of boarders who were studying at the local university. I'll talk more about them later, as they both had experiences of their own, but mine was strange. It wasn't so much of an encounter as it was an experience. It was late, and it was overly warm in the house. I was laying back on my bed, trying to get some sleep. My cat, Chaos, was curled up on my chest, and I was thinking of feet.
Hmm?
In the corner of the room, old lady feet. In my mind's eye, I pictured white feet shot through with light blue veins. My mind started racing, but I couldn't get the image out of my head. I was wondering why I was thinking about this, but it wouldn't go away. The vision traveled higher, and I saw a nightgown, white shoulders, and then a neck with a rope taut around it. Purple bruises spidered out onto the pointed chin, a gaping mouth, and bulging eyes. I clenched my eyes tight, trying to push the image out of my head. Then Chaos suddenly stood up and hissed at the exact same corner that had punched itself into my brain. Something snapped taut at the back of my neck. In that moment, my mind couldn't comprehend what was happening. Without a second thought, I picked up my shit, grabbed my hissing cat, and went up the stairs, shutting the door. That was the last of the lady in the basement. Interlude 3. I know what you're thinking when you read that. pretty inconclusive, and it very much could have been the imagination worked up with a bunch of coincidences. I'm not going to argue with you. I've thought the same thing myself. Yet I don't think until the end of my days that I'm going to be able to get the image of that hanged woman out of my head. I've tried, believe you me, and it's not like something that I think about all the time, but sometimes, when the lights are out and the red sticks on my digital clock flicker in the dark, the image of her bulging eyes and the webbed bruising enter my mind. If that's not a haunting, I don't know what is. As I mentioned, I wasn't the only one who experienced things in the house. These stories were told to me by two boarders that lived with my mother while I was away for a year living with my girlfriend. We got a small apartment not far from the house, and often helped my mom out while living there, taking care of her pets and such. While the house was effectively empty, my mom stayed with her boyfriend a lot, she got two boarders from the local university to live there. I got to know both of them while they were there, but both of them ended up leaving abruptly and under very similar circumstances. The first one I'll talk about we can refer to as Christian John, namely because he was an evangelical Christian. Mm. Those are not super common in Canada, are they? I feel like they're a pretty rare thing.
I have no idea.
He liked to talk about Jesus a lot. He seemed to be a down-to-earth guy aside from the Jesus thing, and didn't seem flaky. He always paid my mom on time and didn't cause any problems. You can imagine my surprise when one day I got a call from my mom. Apparently Christian John had left in the night, refused to return to the house, and asked me to pack up his stuff for him so he could pick it up at the front door. I had a lot of questions, but my mom didn't have any answers. It wasn't something I particularly wanted to do, but at the same time I really needed to know what happened.
Are you telling me you don't want to pack up someone else's room?
Yeah, right there, if I'm packing it up, it's either going in the dumpster or a bonfire.
I did as I was asked, packed up his clothes and all of his personal belongings, and met him at the front door. He was absolutely terrified. Everything about his mannerisms told me that he had experienced some deep personal shock. The story was as follows. He had just gotten home from class. It was a late class, so he didn't get home until after 10 p.m. or so. He put his books down and noticed he had left the bedroom door open. More so, it would appear as though the dog, Paws, had gotten into his room and was sleeping on the bed, under a blanket. Which is weird to begin with. Dogs rarely sleep under blankets. He told the dog to leave the room. It grumbled and shuddered, but didn't move. He wasn't a huge fan of dogs, and he was tired, so he had had enough. He grabbed the blanket and yanked it off. Nothing was underneath. I made a face when he told me the story. It was cliche as shit, and I wasn't buying it. Yet, I don't think he'd rather sleep at his friend's place than in the house. I didn't tell him anything about my experiences in the house, and my mom was pretty generous. $400 got him the room and entire run of the house, including the food. More so, he was pretty shook up. Wouldn't go any further into the house than the foyer. The second story came from Jasmine, the other boarder. She was there much longer than Christian John, and unlike Christian John, she was aware of the stories and wasn't worried. She was under the complete impression that ghosts can't hurt people, and they're nothing to be afraid of. She was also a little nuts and claimed that she was psychic. I largely ignored her, and she did me the same favor. Though when I moved back in, I discovered that she had my old room and I had to sleep in the basement. Oh no, back to the lady in the basement. One day she told me that I could move back into my old room because she was moving out. I asked her what the deal was, and apparently she had woken up and there was a man standing beside her bed. She thought it was me, but quickly realized the frame was all wrong. He didn't say anything, he just stood there, and she got a distinctly negative impression from him. I asked her what he looked like, and she said tall and menacing. She didn't want to spend another night in the house and left that evening, packing up her things over time over the next few weeks. Not the best witness, but witness nonetheless. Interlude 4. I can't account for the veracity of the claims of the two boarders. I wasn't there and I didn't know them well enough to vouch for the truth of their statements. Part of it is what I mentioned in the introduction. I'm a skeptic at heart. Nothing they say or do could probably change that, but I figured that their stories should find a place in here. I'll leave it at that. The next story takes place somewhere around 1999.
It's a good year.
Yeah, was it?
I think so.
Is that when the Better Than Ezra song came out?
No, that was far before that.
Was it?
A couple of years.
Was it?
I feel think like so.
I'm going to say it was 2000.
Okay.
A friend of mine, Cassandra, had me pick her up at some sports ball practice at a park near my place.
I mean, President Clinton was acquitted. We had Columbine.
Yeah, remember when the worst thing a president had ever done was lie about a blowjob?
Oh, right. An earthquake killed 13,000 in Turkey. But guess what? The women's soccer team won the World Cup.
Was that Mia Hamm?
Yeah, whip
Rock'em Sock'em jetpack shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
What about Better Than Ezra?
I don't think it matters, and I don't think it came out that year.
Okay. I figured since she and I didn't have any better plans, I'd make some dinner and we could go check out a movie afterwards. Or head out to a coffee at a cafe or something. So I picked her up.
1993.
Oh, that was way off.
I should also add, Jamie's cat crawls under our sheet all the
time. Oh, cats do that. Dogs don't. Cats do that all the time.
I don't know how animals work.
Yeah,
cats
obviously.
Cats do. Alligators do the same thing.
I love alligators. So I picked her up and she asked if she could use my shower. I told her be my guest and told her where the towels were and that I'd get a start on making a stir fry for dinner. About 10 minutes had passed and I heard the shower kick on. I'd heated up the oil in the wok and was cutting up some onions when I heard a deafening crash and then a scream. I dropped the knife. Mistake, you should have brought the knife. Took the wok off the element.
God, I love Canadians.
Took the wok off the element and dashed up the stairs to where the screaming was coming from. As I reached the landing, Cassandra was beet red and yelling, wearing nothing but a towel. I held up my hands defensively and asked what had happened. She said she was about to step in the shower and the bathroom door was suddenly kicked open and that had nearly given her a heart attack. I quickly realized she was blaming me. I pointed downstairs and told her it most certainly wasn't me because I was downstairs cooking dinner. She suddenly turned milk white, and I thought it was time I told her about the house I was living in. Whew. I told her to finish up her shower and join me downstairs, and I'd tell her all about it. Yeah, if somebody was like, yeah, I gotta tell you about this house, go ahead and finish up your shower in the room that like somebody just tried to kick in and scare the shit out of you, and then come back downstairs, I'd be like, yeah, the hell I'm doing that.
Or you're just gonna hit the crits.
The crits?
Yeah, the pits, the crotch, the critical spots. Quick shower.
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that either. I was like, what are you even talking about?
Well,
okay.
Just starting things.
We had a discussion over dinner about it, and she believed me, as she realized it really was impossible for me to have kicked open the door and then come running up the stairs, as she would have seen me go down the stairs after the door had been booted open. Before I tell the last story, I want to touch on a few things. I wasn't the only one in this house that experienced supernatural activity of some sort. My brother also experienced a lot of things, and he has just recently begun to talk about it. He too saw a woman hanging in the basement in the exact same spot that I did, though he told me about it only after he read a draft version of this account. The result was him leaving the house for a period of time and moving back in with my dad. He would come back and then get creeped out enough that he'd move back in with our father. Again, I want to reiterate that I don't think I believe in ghosts, or rather, in the spirits of the dead coming back to contact the living. With that almost being said, I also know that something strange happened in that house, something that was definitely far beyond my understanding of how this world works. The last story that I want to tell was probably the most intense. It was my last year of university. It was maybe a month before I would meet the woman who would later become my wife.
Oh.
And just a couple months before I would move out. It was September and I had a paper due. I was hard at work on my clunky old PC. I turned off ICQ, the messenger software at the time, and was deep in, my fingers hitting the keys rhythmically almost as if I was in a trance. I've always been able to do that, to sit in front of a screen, drown the rest of the world out, and beat on the keys as though my life depended on it, putting my thoughts to a digital medium. You guys always yell at me for pounding my keyboard too hard. You're always mad at me for that.
You're a hard typer.
Yeah. I actually was FaceTiming with a client the other day, and they said the same thing. They're like, is that the sound of you typing?
Yeah, well, it's totally fine if you're not being recorded for a podcast.
Yeah, well, you know.
Literally.
It makes me nervous to be in the same room. It seems like she's super angry.
Some writers can't be true to themselves without hearing the scratch of a pen on paper. I feel the same way about the methodical beat of a clicky type board and the hum of an overworked cooling fan. So there I was, hitting those keys, when I heard a door open downstairs and voices piling into the living room three stories down. I recognized them. I could hear my brother and his band of college vagrants caught up in drunken revelry. I had just cleaned up the house after I had made dinner and wasn't particularly in the mood for socializing, given that I was caught up in writing my paper that was due on Monday. I gritted my teeth and bore down on the keyboard, intent on ignoring their shouts. I heard plates and glasses coming out of the cupboards, and I knew that I'd have one hell of a mess to clean up tomorrow morning. Pushing away all distractions, I persisted. As predicted, within a few moments, I heard my brother open the door to my room at the bottom of the stairs and make his way up them, his feet clunking heavily against the treads. I could hear his breathing as he entered my office space, my back turned to him. I could smell the cigarettes and fall air lingering as he stood in the door. I could feel the pressure of his being in there. It was completely quiet aside from the clicking of my keys and his breathing for what seemed like an hour, but I know it was only a minute. The expectation he had for me to go down and hang out with them and the silent understanding as he knew that I couldn't because I had a paper due. I broke the silence. I couldn't take it anymore.
Fine, I'll come play Smash Brothers with you guys.
Not taking my eyes away from the monitor, I simply said, having a party? Complete silence, outside of breathing. The eyes boring a hole in the back of my head, I continued, I just cleaned up, bud. If you're gonna have a party, I'm gonna need you guys to clean up in the morning. I spent a good hour cleaning up, and I don't want to have to do it again. Also, if you guys could keep the music to
whiny.
I know. Also, if you guys could keep the music to a minimum, that'd be great. I have this big paper due on Monday, and I've been procrastinating. I need to get it done. More silence. Then I heard just one word uttered. Huh. It wasn't a question. It wasn't a statement. It was more of a sound. I should have thought it was weird at the time. My brother's pretty chatty, especially after he's had a few drinks. Just a one-syllable noise, and then I felt him leave the room, taking the smell of cigarettes and fall air with him. I heard him clunk down the stairs, open the door at the bottom of them, and close the door behind him. I was up at least for 4 or 5 more hours writing away. Finished the paper in the wee hours of the morning and saved it. At the time, I could hear the party going on downstairs, and I could identify their voices. Jeff, Ashley, Ryan, Cheryl, Jesse, all of them. I thought about going downstairs, grabbing a smoke, and having a drink before hitting the sack, but I was just too tired. I went to my room, crawled into bed, and went to sleep. The next morning, I got up, went downstairs, and saw that my brother and his friends had cleaned up the place. Everything was exactly how I left it. I went outside, had a smoke in the crisp autumn air, and there was no sign of them being there. No butts in the ashtray, no empty bottles on the stoop, nothing. I went out for a coffee with a friend, told them about my paper, and had a few laughs about how much more fun it would have been to drink with my brother and his friends. I didn't really think too much about it afterwards until I got home. My brother was up and about. I heard him having a shower upstairs. On my way up to my room, I knocked on the bathroom door and said, "Hey, dude, thanks for cleaning up last night."
It would have been funny if he kicked the door in.
Actually, kicked it open.
Yeah. I really appreciate not waking up to the house being a disaster. There was a pause. Then he stopped in the shower and said, "What the hell are you going on about? You had a party here last night." I stammered and was pretty sure he was messing with me. "Dude, I was out in the valley last night. I just got home. Ask Jeff. He's downstairs making coffee." It was that moment I felt the reality of the situation coming down on me. I had heard them. I had smelled them. They were there. I didn't say anything. I just went upstairs and laid down. What the hell would I have seen if I had turned around? The question still haunts me, and I don't think it's something I'm ever going to find an answer to. I wish I could end this on some dramatic route. My family fleeing the house with demons screaming and blood pouring from the walls. Sorry to disappoint. In my experience, that only happens in fiction. The truth is a lot more terrifying, as at least when you're away from the danger, you have answers. But in my case, there are little to none. I don't know why these experiences happened to me, or what significance the property played in the scenario. I ran into an old teacher of mine who grew up in the house and asked her about it. She told me the house has always been haunted, and my experiences echoed a lot of the same ones she had growing up. As I moved out with my girlfriend at the time, my mom sold the house shortly afterwards. I watched the house as it went through several families within a few years. Once I even had an urge and I stopped in. I was featured on a national ghost show called This Is What Happened, which ran on a television station called Scream Television. I stopped in to see if we could take footage of the outside of the house. I was invited in and had coffee with the current occupant. When she asked me to tell my stories, a look crossed over her face that I don't think I'll ever be able to forget. Another thing I can add to the list of things surrounding the entire experience that will be with me for the rest of my life. There are a lot of other experiences that I've left out here, primarily because they were too brief, questionable, or just plain weird, and I haven't really been able to write them down while capturing the weirdness of the event. Maybe I'll submit them at a later date, but here it is, the story of my haunted house.
Okay.
Thanks for taking the time, Taylor.
Okay, honestly, like, that's enough things. I triple dog dare you, Sam and Byron. Call him a liar.
Well, I'm with Taylor.
Yeah, no,
I don't believe in ghosts.
But I believe in Taylor.
I do believe in Taylor.
Well, I don't know this, but I suspect that Taylor uses inhalants pretty.
Okay, honestly, you are really trying to burn a bridge, aren't you?
But, like, you know what I mean, like spray paint.
Lighting it on fire.
Well, I mean, whether or not it is spirits, it's a great story.
Mm-hmm. Well written.
I agree. Was really well written, and I really appreciate all the nuances, all the different witnesses, spooky stories all around. Honestly, that's enough for me to be scared of the place, and yeah.
Scary stories from everyone tonight.
Yeah, agreed.
Wow.
Agreed. Yeah, thank you, everyone. And like I said,
first pop-in guest.
Yeah, first pop-in.
It's getting kind of dark. The fire's burning down.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm really excited because, as I said, we've already got to start to a next episode with a ton of really cool stories. I think over time, our listeners...
Either more awful things are happening to them, or...
Or they're just deciding to buy into this whole True Tales of Terror thing. Maybe some of them were nervous about sharing their story at first, and now they've decided, okay, maybe I can do this.
It's a safe space.
It is a safe space. And I really appreciate the time everybody takes because, again, this is one of the rare occasions I have to be able to twist Sam and Byron into believing some stuff because they know our listeners are great. They can't argue with that.
They are great.
And if you have a story you want to share, kelly@friday.com.
Please, write always. Those up.
Before we leave, though, I do want to talk about something that's hanging in the cabin right behind us. A very nice...
And dripping.
All right. It's a not a body. It's a sign from our good friend Toby. He sent us something on the Stanley Hotel letter at our notepad here.
Oh.
I just want to say thanks so much. He sent us this not sorry, we're creepy sign.
Yep.
And he said, hey, Friday, I saw this and thought of you guys. And that's very, very nice. I hope you have a designated recording space where you might put things like this. If not, I feel really dumb and worthless.
Well, we do have a space, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't feel dumb and worthless.
He goes on, thanks for doing what you do. It's all pretty fantastic. Toby.
Aww. Thanks, Toby.
Yeah, that's very nice of you. And thanks for taking advantage of our P.O. Box, which is Fright Day LLC P.O. Box 372 Lolo, Montana 59847.
The postmaster at our little post office here has told me that our mailbox is consistently the drippiest.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Was that more of a warning?
I assumed that it was admiration, but...
It could be either. Maybe it's both.
I gotta say, guys, I'm stuffed of s'mores, and we gotta turn in early. We got kiddo showing up tomorrow.
That's really true.
Hopefully it works out better for this group than it did that last one.
And next week, we're going to be back in the old studio. Well, I guess. And next week.
Back here.
Yeah, right here, because we're here at camp now forever, I guess.
Forever.
We're going to be talking about a film that's on DVD now, Greta.
Greta. It's about Greta Van Susteren?
No, it's not.
It's not?
No.
Famous newscaster?
We missed Greta in the theaters, and now it's, I guess, our second chance to hit that. So, to hit that. Listen, guys.
Wow, B.
I'm going to bed. Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Kelly Frightday on Twitter. You can email me kelly@frightday.com.
And I'm at Sam Frightday. Email me sam@frightday.com.
And you can hit me on Twitter at Byron McCoy.
Hit that.
Also at...
You can tap that Byron at...
You can Byron McCoy on Twitter and Instagram. Byron@frightday.com is my email address.
I dig it.
And until next Friday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I bake things and I'm awesome.
Fuck off, Sam.
You've been listening to an Audio Wool original, produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.